Reuters, citing sources, says that Trump University has agreed to settle the civil fraud lawsuit for $25 million. That's according to a source quoted by Reuters. And the law firms representing students in Trump's university case will not seek attorney's fees. They will only try and recoup the costs of the litigation.
Japanese Prime Minister Shinzo Abe on Thursday becoming the first world leader to get a face-to-face meeting with President-elect Donald Trump. A hastily arranged tete-a-tete aimed at smoothing the waters with a key U.S. partner, Abe saying he held candid talks with Trump in a warm atmosphere.
So we say to President Obama, in any and every way you can, stop the pipeline. There are other approaches, such as declaring Standing Rock a federal monument. Let's do that.
WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. It is Monday, November 21st, 2016, 5:08. Welcome to The Opening Bell. Welcome to another edition of The Opening Bell, another business week. It's going to be a short week, but boy, do we have lots going on this week. In addition to Thanksgiving, we have the big fight for gifts on Friday. As Black Friday rolls around, it's going to be the biggest day, shopping day of the year for retailers. We'll tell you a little bit about how they're getting ready for that, how you might be getting ready too, maybe an extra trip to the gym before the big meal on Thursday. Or maybe you just give in and start eating right away like I have. It is a long week, so pace yourself. Whatever you do, shopping or food, as we head off onto a very shortened week in terms of business and activity. We'll see that on the markets this morning. Let's start first at the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk. We'll see a very low volume this week. A number of people have this week off or taking it off as extra vacation. So expect most of the indices to have lower volume this morning. We're seeing that on Wall Street this morning. Dow futures off about up just about 5 points, a very weak meandering back and forth. S&P is up just about 3. The Nasdaq futures are up just about 9 this morning. Crude oil is trading at $46.48 a barrel, up just 79 cents. World markets this morning showing some of the same meandering around. The DAX and the CAC are a little bit higher this morning, generally higher rates in Europe compared to Asia, where we see a mixed report this morning. The Nikkei is leading the pack up about 138 points, almost a full percentage point this morning on the Asian markets. We'll have more on the markets as we move through this morning. Some stories that are making news this morning that you need to know about. It is Cyber Monday and Black Friday. Those are the two big days for retailers coming up. First, Black Friday later this week, and then Cyber Monday the Monday after. It is expected that most retailers will do most of their business on Black Friday. This year, Cyber Monday falls on the Monday after Thanksgiving. That's typically the busiest day of the year for online shopping. So it's a 1-2 punch for retailers, and they're certainly looking forward to it. They've had a rough year. O'Hare International Airport workers who voted to strike soon will announce when they plan to take action. Service Employees International Union Local 1 officials say they will announce the date of their strike at 10 a.m. this morning here in Chicago. About 500 workers are expected to be on strike, but the airport says it should not affect the holiday travel season as we get ready to pack up and head off. Also this morning, a federal banking regulator has imposed tighter restrictions on Wells Fargo and Company, requiring the banking giant to get advanced approval from regulators before making a wide range of business decisions. The Office of the Comptroller of Currency, which oversees national banks, announced the action in a statement late Friday. The OCC will require the bank to get prior approval before making changes in its board of directors, in its senior executive officers, and also before making any golden parachute payments to departing executives. Just some of the news making your money this morning as we begin our Monday edition of The Opening Bell. The Monday means it's a CEO spotlight time. Have you ever gone to the doctor to get your eyes checked and thought, wow, I just paid a lot of money for nothing? Well, there's a company out there that kind of feels the same way as you. It's called Opternative, and it is what it says. It's Optical Alternative. The CEO is Aaron Dalek. He's with us this morning here on The Opening Bell. And Aaron, I'd like to begin first with really what your headline is. You've actually been fighting some states in court who've taken you to court to try to block your company from operating in their states. Let's start a little bit with that first. Welcome to The Opening Bell. Tell us what you're fighting.
Well, because they are restricting our doctors' rights to offer patients a affordable and convenient way to get prescriptions for glasses and contacts. That is unconstitutional and it's immoral. And we are protecting our doctors' rights to offer those prescriptions and our patients' rights to get affordable health care in South Carolina.
They actually passed a law to ban you.
Yes. The optometrists work with the legislature in South Carolina to ban our technology and any technology like it in South Carolina.
Okay, so let's back up a few beats and tell people why Optrenative would create such a stir.
Optrenative is the most affordable and convenient way for getting a prescription for glasses and contacts. You use just your computer and your smartphone, and you can do it anywhere. You go through, and your computer is the digital eye chart. And so images are put on the computer screen, and your smartphone is a remote control. And so we walk you 10 feet from the screen using your feet as the measuring tool, which it sounds a little bit weird, but we have you kind of walk heel to toe steps away from the screen. And when you're 10 feet away, we have you then cover one eye and answer questions like, which character is different? And it's really simple. It's actually quite a bit simpler than what you do in the doctor's office. It's not that which is better, one or two. It's actually a lot easier questions. And then we have you do a vision history, medical history, like you do in the doctor's office. And once you're done, you'd pay $40 for a prescription for glasses or contacts and $60 for both. And the results would be sent to a doctor, an ophthalmologist licensed in your state, and you'd receive a prescription within 24 hours. And optometrists in South Carolina and some other states are not happy about it.
Aaron Dalek is the CEO of Optrenative. We'll continue our pre-dawn conversation with him here on the opening bell as we continue with our CEO spotlight on this Monday edition. So on the WGN Associated Bank market desk for today, let's tell you about a couple of stocks of interest that we're watching very closely as we move into this week. Obviously, Sears is one of them, Sears Holding. They're off just a little bit this morning. United Continental, as we begin a big travel season, is up just about 0.5%. We're also watching Walgreens as we move into the cold and flu season, up just about down actually just about 1% now this morning in early trading. This is the opening bell.
From ABC News, Wall Street Now. Investors gave back some recent gains on Friday, the Dow Jones Industrial Average closing down 36 points to 18,867. The S&P 500 lost a little over 5 points. The NASDAQ, which touched a record high early in the session, also turned lower by the close. Wells Fargo is about to come under closer government scrutiny. The controller of the currency says it will require the bank to get advanced approval before making a wide range of business decisions after a scandal involving accounts opened without customers' approval. Abercrombie & Fitch says its profit fell 81% in the last quarter. Sales at established stores fell 14%. Abercrombie's anticipating a rough holiday season as it continues to have trouble attracting young shoppers. And as you head to the store to buy Thanksgiving, you can expect to shell out a little less money. The American Farm Bureau Federation quotes the cost of a classic Thanksgiving dinner for 10 will be $49.87, down from $50.11 last year. Jim Ryan, ABC News.
You're listening to the opening bell on 720 WGN.
Good morning. Welcome back to the program. It's 519 in the CEO spotlight today is Optrenative. It is an just what you think the name says. It's an alternative to optic care. And the CEO is in our spotlight today. Aaron Dalek is with us. We've been talking before the break about how this company, your company, Aaron, caused a little bit of a stir in South Carolina. And you've actually been blocked by that state and a couple of other states from doing business because what you do, I guess, is kind of cutting into the average bill of optic care there. Let's talk a little bit about that. What is it about what you do that has gotten them all riled up?
Well, the way it's been done, what you're talking about, those lenses that are put in front of you, that big machine, it's kind of a little scary. It's called a four-opter. Well, the way it's been done like that for over 100 years. We're talking about 1895 is when that was originally invented. So we're still doing it that way in 2016. And so we've come up with a totally new way for testing for your refractive error. That's your vision prescription, your visual prescription that you need to get a prescription for glasses and contacts. And we've done it a lot simpler. We ask you questions based on the images you see on your computer screen. And we've made those questions really simple. Which one's different? One, two, three, or four? Questions that, you know, even someone as young as 11 could do. And we're only testing patients 18 to 50, but we've designed it for someone that a seventh grade reading level could test.
Now, how long have you been doing this? And if you could give us a sense of how accurate these tests have been that you've done so far.
The tests are extremely accurate. We have a clinical trial that has taken people through our test as well as taking people through the traditional refraction and the way it's done in the doctor's office with real optometrists. And they put glasses on the patients with both prescriptions. And when they were asked, how confident were you with your vision? How satisfied were you with their vision? It was statistically equivalent. When they had people actually look through those prescriptions and say, you know, how well can you see and test that? Statistically equivalent. And so we know that these prescriptions are extremely accurate. And our patients, we've done tens of thousands of prescriptions. Our patients are extremely satisfied with their prescriptions. And we have 100% money back guarantee.
You don't claim anywhere along the way that these are comprehensive eye exams.
We do not. This is not a comprehensive eye exam. We say that multiple times. And we recommend all of our patients get a eye health exam every 2 years, which is what's recommended by the American Optometric Association, and that's the group that is trying to ban us in many states because we are not a comprehensive eye exam, which we clearly state to all of our patients.
Is there a fear that you might miss something or that somebody's going to get a wrong test? I mean, it seems to me that what you've explained is that if there's a problem, they go further and get that more comprehensive test.
Exactly. We recommend patients get that eye health exam on a regular basis, the same frequency that is recommended by the American Optometric Association as well as the American Academy of Ophthalmology, actually more often than the American Academy of Ophthalmology recommends. And so if you're following those recommendations, you're going to be taken care of the way you should, and you're not going to miss those things. And in addition to that, we don't serve every patient that comes to us. We serve most patients that come to us, but sometimes we identify things that could be a problem, and we say online refraction is not the best tool for you to be using, and we recommend a in-office visit for that patient.
So all of this time, we've been sitting in front of these contraptions, and it's sort of been a dog and pony show for most of us.
I would say that there is a better way, and that better way is Optirnative. We've figured that out. It's taken years for our company to figure that out, but we figured it out, and it's available to patients in 39 states, and we are going to make that available to more patients, and we're excited to offer that not only to people who can use it today, but to as many people as we can, whether it be here in the U.S., expand internationally. We're working on an employer offering, which is a free vision benefit that any employer can offer for free to their employees. And that's going to make this much more widely available to people who don't necessarily know about this benefit, don't necessarily know that this is available to them. And I think that's really going to be a huge benefit to a lot of people who don't have access to affordable eye care.
The battle lines are really being drawn, aren't they, between these new technologies and innovations. I think of Uber and the battles they're fighting, Airbnb. The old guard is not going to go out quietly, are they?
No. And, you know, our company is actually working on creating an advocacy alliance for startups. And so it's something that we're in the works of creating right now, and it's going to create a voice for startups, whether they be big startups like Uber or Airbnb or smaller startups, because those lines are being drawn. And protectionist legislation like the bill in South Carolina that banned us is happening in all industries across the country. And it's just, it's unfair and it's ridiculous. And it's happening whether you're in a Republican state or a Democratic run state. And it's because these big industries that have had their time and their day in the sun are saying, well, we have the money and we think that we can pass these protectionist laws to stop anyone from innovating and providing more affordable, more accessible, new innovative technologies to consumers that's going to be better for them. And it's just not fair.
I was surprised to see that Indiana is among the three states, too.
Indiana and Georgia, I mean, these are states that are very supposedly very free market states, but they clearly chose the more protectionist route when it comes to ocular telehealth.
What is the battle like? Is it on their side, these lobbyists with big bags of cash coming to these lawmakers against startups like you?
What it's more that these organizations are well funded. They've been around for a long time. They've been donating to different campaigns. They've had their voice heard for a long time in these state houses. We're talking about decades. And so they come in, they say, hey, we have this bill. They say, this is about patient health, right? And in this case, it's not. It's pure protectionism. But when there's no one on the other side, other than one or two small startups that don't have a strong voice, the legislators say, well, you know, there's this person I've known for decades coming in and saying I should do this, versus maybe there's a startup, or maybe in Indiana, we didn't even know that bill was passed, right? And so we couldn't fight it. And so it's hard for startups to be able to counter that, even if these legislators would maybe fight against it stronger had we been there longer.
Aaron Dalek is the CEO of Opternative. You can find more information out about this company online. Their home site, the website, is opternative.com. You can also follow them on social media as well. And you can hear more of our conversation. We'll continue talking with Aaron after the bell and post it online later this morning in our podcast of The Opening Bell at WGNradio.com.
From ABC News, Tech Trends. Your feet could help power the bright lights of Las Vegas. Cleantech startup EngoPlanet is taking a serious look at the amount of CO2 created by streetlights, which amounts to a staggering 10 billion metric tons produced worldwide every year. One of its first products is a streetlight, which EngoPlanet's Peter Mirovich calls a completely off-the-grid solution.
It's not connected with the regular sources of energy. It's powered by solar energy and by your footsteps.
In short, the LED light system is powered by kinetic footstep pads embedded in pedestrian walkways.
There are three microgenerators that create energy every time someone steps over them.
And these microgenerators can yield enough power for the LED street lamps, as well as for security cameras and even Wi-Fi charging stations. If the tests in Vegas are successful, EngoPlanet hopes to bring the technology to other cities, including New York. With Tech Trends, I'm Karen Chase. ABC News.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning. Welcome back to the program. 5:39 on this Monday edition of The Opening Bell. There's a new book out by the Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist Joanne Lublin of The Wall Street Journal. She's the management and news editor there at Wall Street Journal. She's also has ties from Chicago, graduated from Northwestern University. She's interviewed more than 50 trailblazing executive women who broke through the corporate glass ceiling to offer some inspiring and surprising insights and lessons to how they did it. And she is with us on the phone this morning. Joanne, first of all, welcome to The Opening Bell. I guess I'd like to ask you, in light of the recent election, whether or not you think there's been a setback, if you can quantify it as a setback for women, not only in the corporate boardrooms, but in political boardrooms as well.
How much of a setback is it if I were to quantify it?
Yeah.
Well, obviously, we'd be having a different conversation if Hillary Clinton had won, But I think if Hillary Clinton had won, the onus then would have been on working women to hold Hillary Clinton accountable for the things that she promised she was going to do for working women. I don't think President-elect Trump has made similar kinds of promises, which is why then the burden and responsibility on working women of America is going to be that much greater, which is why reading my book will help ambitious women everywhere advance in their careers. And I've had numerous women who have heard me speak over the last week in venues in Chicago and San Francisco talk about the fact that that's my book is giving them hope that there are ways to succeed for women in corporate America.
You talked to trailblazing women. Who did you talk to, and what stories stuck out as the most important or the most poignant?
Well, I interviewed 52 high-ranking corporate executive women, nearly two-thirds of whom have served as a public company CEO. People like Mary Barra, the CEO of General Motors, Ginni Rometty, the CEO of IBM, Irene Rosenfeld, the CEO of Mondelez International, Beth Mooney, the CEO of KeyCorp. And one of the most common leadership traits that many of these women exhibited was resilience. Resilience in the face of setbacks, personal and professional. And certainly working women everywhere who supported Hillary's candidacy feel like they've suffered a political setback. But the women I interviewed, rather than being slowed down or discouraged by setbacks that they encountered, actually used, in particular, career setbacks to become better leaders.
You interviewed one woman specifically from Chicago, and I wonder if you could share that story. I believe it was with the woman who was going to work for Xerox. Do I have that wrong?
Well, what's interesting about Anne Mulcahy's story was the fact that she joined Xerox as a saleswoman, and after being a successful saleswoman, wanted to get into management, as many successful professionals, men and women alike, tried to do. And in her case, she applied for more than a half a dozen managerial positions before finally winning such a promotion. And it was to be in charge of the main market for Xerox, which at that time was not doing very well.
Her final quote, you use a quote from her, and she says, learning to work for a-holes is really an important thing to do, and surviving them, too. That's where that resilience comes in, right?
Well, in her case, the man who hired her or gave her the promotion to run Maine was very skeptical that she could do it. And in fact, when she was interviewing with him for the job, he had a map of Maine displayed on his wall because he wasn't sure she had any idea where it was. When she took over Maine and had all male team reporting to her and started to turn around what had been a very unsuccessful operation, he refused to give her any credit. He later left Xerox and took a number of men with him. He did not ask her. And it was from that her quote emerged, which was, as a number of women did, they learned from working for bad bosses. Some of them were men and some of them were women. But they learned how to be better bosses by seeing a bad example and essentially vowing to be different and being better.
And some of them, too, adopted practices to sort of get accepted by male peers during some of those early days. You talk about Mary Barra, who was the first CEO, first female CEO at General Motors.
Right. And in Mary Barra's case, she had come into the GM fold through going to a college that was sponsored by GM. Therefore, she had to do a fair amount of internships while she was still in college. And then in one of her early full-time jobs after finishing college, she had to walk around a pretty male-dominated manufacturing plant where some of the men wolf-whistled her. She was obviously very young, probably someone who they thought was attractive. And when this repeatedly happened in this one particular plant from this one particular man, Mary went up to him one day and said, "What are you doing?" Just point-blank sort of stared him in the face. And he said, "Communicate." I mean, obviously he didn't know what to say since he was whistling at her. And she said, "Well, if you want to communicate, let's communicate." And they started talking to each other and essentially relating to one another as one human being toward another. They became very good colleagues. He stopped wolf whistling. And the neatest thing about that whole experience for Mary is that the handful of other men on the plane who had been wolf whistling her stopped doing it as well.
It is beyond belief that it was going to take perhaps until 2058 for women to reach pay equity. It's according to one research. You report on this daily and now written this book about it. Why will it take so long? What can we do to speed that up?
Well, I think what will speed it up is what's already starting to happen, particularly among some companies, particularly the high-tech sector, which is they are paying much closer attention to gender pay inequities. They're doing pay equity studies and trying to figure out whether there are differences that are gender-related. In some cases, they're adjusting men's pay as a result of those studies. At one of the companies where I made an appearance promoting the book, they said that one thing that they found out by doing this study was it wasn't enough to look at how much men and women who are currently working at the company are making. They had to go back and look at how they decided to pay new hires. Because to the extent that women were at an economic disadvantage to men, and therefore they were simply matching or paying them slightly more than they had made in their last job, they, as the new employer, were essentially perpetuating those same pay inequities. And as a result of that, they decided that they were going to essentially assign values to jobs and not tie the pay of the new hire to what they had made before, but rather to the value they were bringing and what they were worth in performing the tasks that they were being hired for. It's the only way that they saw that they could break the cycle.
In talking with the women for your book, did you find any strategies that women who might be listening now might be able to utilize right now to get paid fairly?
Yes, I think the smartest strategy that women who are listening to this could follow is to do your homework. And that means not just finding out what the person who now has the job is making, which obviously is important, particularly if you're already in the company or looking for a promotion, but to the extent there are people in other departments in the same company who are performing similar tasks with different departments, you ought to try and do some work about what their pay levels are like. You need to come in and also know what kind of value you are bringing or offering to the company so you don't sell yourself short. And one of the underlying messages of that chapter in the book is if you don't ask, you don't get. And I myself have been guilty of that in my career. I don't ever recall an instance where I was either offered a raise or a promotion by the journal where I ever pushed back and try to find out if that was the right amount.
One of the most shocking things I think I read from this was something called, you found, the imposter syndrome. What is that?
Well, the imposter syndrome is not something I invented. It's actually been researched for decades. And it's this notion that somehow, even though you're qualified or really good at what you do or what you expect to do in a new job, that you don't believe it. You think that you're not good enough. And some of the studies would suggest that women berate themselves by believing that they are imposters and that somehow somebody's going to find out that they really aren't good enough. And what I've said in a number of appearances I've made related to the book is we all have that little voice inside our heads that says you're not good enough or you don't deserve to be here or you didn't really earn that promotion. You somehow got it by being an imposter. You have to have an equally strong voice that tells you you are good enough. And if you haven't acquired all the skills that are needed for this job that somebody else thinks you are good enough for, you're going to darn well show that you can.
Whether it be in a boardroom with CEOs or, for instance, in religion, like within the Catholic Church, I always say to people, and people always remark, we're losing out on more than half of the ideas, the possible ideas that could be brought to the table to better not only ourselves, but our corporations, our companies, our religions, with all the women that we're not promoting to these positions. I mean, did you find that there's sort of that frustration among the leaders you talk to?
Well, I think the frustration that I heard some of them express was over the women that reported to them or reported to their direct reports' own unwillingness to bet on themselves. But I also think what is very encouraging, and I talk about a lot in the book, is the growing number of male corporate leaders who have seen the studies that show the more women you get on boards, the more women you get in senior management, the better are the rewards for shareholders. And so it's a win-win situation for men and for women to the extent that we recognize the untapped, in many respects, talents of the other gender.
Joanne Lublin is the author of Earning It, Hard-Won Lessons from Trailblazing Women at the Top of the Business World. She's a reporter for the Wall Street Journal. It's probably why her name sounds familiar. She's also from Chicago. Again, the book Earning It, Hard-Won Lessons from Trailblazing Women at the Top of the Business World from Harper Business, just released in October.
You're listening to The Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
It's 5:54. Welcome back to the program on the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk this morning. Dow Future is looking for direction this morning, just up 6 points now as we head toward the 6 o'clock hour. The S&P NASDAQ futures up just a little bit as well. Let's check commodities and agriculture. Good morning, Orion Samuelson.
Good morning, Steve. As we begin this holiday shortened trading week, keep in mind markets will be closed all day Thursday and will close at noon on Friday. But to start the trading week, the cattle traders will be looking at the report issued Friday afternoon, the October Cattle on Feed Report. Ron Plain, an economist at the University of Missouri, characterized the report as unsurprising. And so the numbers that we did see saw the number of cattle on feed November 1st, 1% below a year ago. Number of cattle placed on feed down 4.3% from a year ago. And the number of cattle marketed up 4.7% from October a year ago. And ahead of that report Friday afternoon, the December cattle contract showed a gain of just 7 cents a hundredweight. Meanwhile, we ended last trading week on Friday with gains across the board in the Board of Trade market. December wheat up 4 cents for the day. December corn up 3 3/4. And the January soybeans up 5.5 cents for the day last Friday. Continues to be a push on the use of antibiotics in livestock, and now a shareholder of McDonald's Corporation is redoubling its efforts to convince the fast food chain to stop all of its global restaurants from serving the meat of animals raised with antibiotics that are vital for fighting human infections. Agriculture working on that situation, and we'll continue to watch that. Have a great day. I'm Orion Samuelson.
Thanks, Orion. You have a great day as well. On the Associated Bank WGN market outlook for this Monday, November 21st, 2016, here are some of the things we'll be watching for you. Lots of people on vacation this weekend, including Congress and much of the U.S. government, including the United States Supreme Court. So there are no major economic reports today. We will, however, be watching a story that's developing at O'Hare Airport, where later this morning we expect workers there to announce when they will go on strike. It's widely believed that the workers will strike this week just ahead of the busy holiday travel season. The airport has said repeatedly that it does not expect any of the disruption of the strike to impact travelers this week. Also today, later on, Brazilian scientists say parents, they'll unveil some new technology that will enable parents to watch their unborn babies grow in 3D. This is thanks to new technology that transforms MRI and ultrasound data into 3D data. Just some of the things on our market outlook for this Monday, November 21st. We'll be back bright and early tomorrow morning with another edition of The Opening Bell. We'll continue to follow your money throughout the morning right here on 720 WGN.